Masechet Nedarim, Daf Samech Bet. This daf, we're going to pick up on something that we mentioned yesterday. When we were talking about Arachin, we were comparing Nazir to Arachin, and we quoted this pasuk in Arachin that says, "Daber el bnei Yisrael matar lehem ish." And we learned from the word Bnei Yisrael that comes to exclude non-Jews, that a non-Jew cannot make a vow of Arachin and say, I'm going to donate the value of myself or of that person. Only Jews can do that. However, the word Ish is an inclusive word, and that teaches that a non-Jew can be the object of such a vow. So a Jew can say, I'm going to donate the value of that non-Jew. So Bnei Yisrael is exclusive, and Ish is an inclusive word. So we then compare that to the way the derasha on Nazir. In the end, we were not able to make a similar derasha regarding Nazir, and because we were looking for a source that a non-Jew cannot be a Nazir. And so we didn't use that pasuk in Nazir. But anyway, we did quote this during the discussion. And so that's what we're going to pick up on and analyze it further. So we say, Ihachi, Ish ki yaflid neder be'arkecha, barachin lamali. So this pasuk that we quoted regarding Arachin, why do I need it to tell me anything about Arachin? After all, I could learn that same lesson from somewhere else. Mikidi haitkash Arachin lindarim. And because the laws of Arachin, which is self giving, donating, or value, evaluation of oneself, are linked to nedarim in general. And regarding nedarim in general, we know that non-Jews are included, as it says as follows. Damar keda ish ki yafli neder be'adkecha. That's the pasuk that we just quoted here regarding arachin. Ve'hatanya gabe nedarim ish mata mudomar ish ish lerabot et hagoyim shehen odrim nedarim unedavot ka Yisrael. So this Braita says that the word Ish, let's look at that pasuk. This is also from Vayikra, but from 22, where it says, Daber el Aron vel banav v'amata Ish, Ish, you see the double Ish, mi bet Yisrael u min hager b'Yisrael, she'yakrib korbanon l'chol nidrechem l'chol nidvotechem. So this is talking about vows that one makes regarding someone that says, I'm going to give a certain animal. And it says the word ish, ish, and we learn that that comes to include non-Jews, that they also can make nedarim and give free will offerings just like Jews can. So from here, we know that non-Jews are included within the realm of nedarim, and therefore we can apply that to arachin as well. Now, notice that if you apply this to arachin, you might learn something in a different way, which I think is exactly what we're doing, and I'll prove it to you in a minute. We're going to learn from a non-Jew can make a neder. It will be binding. So regarding arachin, we could say also that a non-Jew can make a valuation vow. I'm going to donate the value of something or other. But the exclusion may only be that he cannot be the object of a vow. A Jew cannot say, I want to donate the value of that non-Jew. So it'll be the other way around. Okay, if we assume that, then I think this makes a lot more sense. So the question is, why do we need this pasuk, ish ki yafli neder berkecha, right, where we have the combination of Bnei Israel here and the exclusion of ish? Why do we need that when we can learn it, compare it to the general law of neder and nedava, which already applies to non-Jews? And the answer is ish ki afli be arachin lamali. So that's still the question. Ela hai ish mi ba ele le atuye mufla samuch li ish. Oh, so here it is. The word ish regarding that said in the context of arachin is coming to include a minor who's almost an adult. 1 year before he becomes an adult, let's say if it's for a boy at 12 years old, 1 year before, that person already can make a binding vow. So that's what the word ish comes to include. This is talking about a Jew, right? Anyone. So the word ish comes and says, yes, a minor 1 year before can make such a evaluation and say, I'm going to donate myself, even though they're only 12 and a half years old. All right, good. Okay, this answer works well according to the opinion that says a minor who's almost an adult can make a vow mid-deoraita. El mandama d'rabanan ish ki afli lamali. But there's another opinion that says that person can make a vow, but it's only binding mid-rabanan, so you wouldn't have a pasuk that would come to include it. So this phrase that's said regarding arachin, what does it come to teach us? And the answer is, oh, maybe it comes to include a minor who's almost an adult who's a non-Jew can make such a vow. Now, this answer would lead to a very interesting paradox that for a Jew who's 12 and a half and they make a vow, it's only binding mid-rabanan. But if a non-Jew who's 12 and a half makes a vow, it would be binding mid-oraita. Okay, interesting. It could make some sense because of if we assume that for a Jew to do it has a certain level of liability as well. So therefore, that liability can only kick in mid-oraita when it's 13. But for a non-Jew, that would be a lower level of liability. So then maybe a 12 and a half could take upon themselves the same level as an adult would. Okay, so that's a good answer also. But all this that we said makes sense according to the opinion that says a Jew can be evaluated, be the object of evaluation, and non-Jews cannot be the object of evaluation. But in case you think that non-Jews cannot make evaluation vow, no, that's why it says the word ish, to teach me that a non-Jew can make evaluation vow. If you say this, then the discussion above made sense. If we learn from Vayikra 22 that non-Jews are obligated in vows in general, including arachin, then it would make sense that the word ish can come and add not only adult non-Jews, but even a 12-year-old non-Jew is also obligated and he can make a valuation vow, right? Then that would make perfect sense. What you see here is what I said when we started, right? This discussion so far is assuming that B'nai Israel is coming to exclude non-Jews from being evaluated, being the object of evaluation, but that they can make a valuation vow themselves, right? And so now we have two Pesukim that are telling us about an inclusive item, and the one from Vayikra 22 is that an adult can make a vow, and the word Ish is going to come to include a minor of advanced age that also can make a vow. So then everything here makes sense. Ela. But if we follow the version of this midrash that we saw on the daf yesterday, that says the word B'nai Israel regarding valuation vows teaches us that only a Jew can make such a vow and a non-Jew cannot make such a vow. And then we ask, well, you might think that the non-Jew can also not be the object of a vow. That's why the word says the word ish, that a non-Jew can be the object of the vow. Wait, to be the object of a vow, you don't have to be a certain age, even a baby that's a month old. One could make a valuation and say, I want to donate to the Beit HaMikdash the value of that 1 month old. It'll be less value, right? He wants to give a smaller donation. So that there's no problem. You don't have to be responsible or an adult or even know what you're doing to be valuated, right? Only the person making the vow can say, I want to donate the value even of a book. Something that has no thought at all. So certainly even a baby. So there would be no reason to include a minor who's close to an adult. So back to the drawing board. According to that opinion, the word ki afli, why do I need that phrase? In this reading, I understand why I need B'nai Israel to exclude non-Jews from making a vow, a valuation vow. I need the word ish to include non-Jews as being the object of such a vow. But the next two words, ish ki yafli. Ki yafli specifically, what do I need those words for? Yafli means to say something clearly, to make a clear vow. What would that be adding? Amarav ada. This is to come to include, it means include in the exclusion, right? To include a non-Jew who's an adult that even though he's an adult, and maybe you would think that he can make such a vow, if he doesn't know how to utter a vow clearly, he never learned the laws of Nedarim, and he can't utter it clearly, he cannot make a vow. Now, the truth is, you don't really need this because you already had B'nai Israel to teach me that only a Jew can make such a vow, and a non-Jew cannot make a valuation vow. So we already know it. But if you only had B'nai Israel and you didn't have Ki Yafli, maybe you would think, you know what, a Jew or a non-Jew who can utter it clearly, they can do it. And maybe B'nai Israel is coming to exclude only a non-Jew who doesn't know how to make a vow. So that's why we say Ki Yafli, that excludes a non-Jew who doesn't know how to make a vow, and B'nai Israel will exclude a non-Jew who even does know how to make a vow. So the point is, all non-Jews are excluded from the possibility of making a valuation vow, but each says they can be the object of such a vow. All right, now we took care of all the possibilities of what the Pisukim regarding Arachin mean. And now we're going to come back to Nazir. Edel ela ki yafli tekatav rechamana gabe nizirut lamali. So regarding a Nazir, it says the same phrase, ki yafli, you have to say it clearly. What does that teach us? Mikadi itkash nizirut lindarim ki yafli lamali. After all, the Nazir is connected to nedarim in general, right? It's called a neder, neder nazir, and so therefore I all know all the rules that apply to general nedarim also apply to nazir. So what's special about nazir that I need the word kiafli to teach me? And the answer is le'atuye yadayim she'enan mochichot. Di'itmar, yadayim she'en mochichot, abaye amar havyan yadayim, rava amar la havya yadayim. Labaye nicha, ela lerava ma'ika le'memar. Oh, so this is comes to include, if someone says a certain phrase, it's a yad, he doesn't say the full phrase that I will be a nazir, he just says a hint to it. A handle, and the handle is not clear what it means. He said half a word, he pointed to something, I'm going to be like that, but it's not clear what he's pointing to. And so when you have an ambiguous abbreviation, so Abaye said that's good. So this would come to include that such a thing, right? Kiafli, however you say it, no matter what, will be fine. So that will be good according to Abaye. Now Rava said that is not good. So such an ambiguous phrase, you will not be a Nazir. So according to Abaye, the word Kiafli can come to include such an ambiguous phrase. According to Rava, he says such an ambiguous phrase, you're not a Nazir. What's he going to do with these words, ki yafli? Ela ki yafli mi ba'ele lichad Rabbi Tarfon. Detanya Rabbi Yehuda omer, mishum Rabbi Tarfon, en ehad mehem Nazir. Lefi shelo nitena nizirut, ela lehafla'a. Oh, so ki yafli might come to, is needed by Rabbi Tarfon. Because Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, if you remember a case where someone said, okay, he's seeing someone from far, he says, I think that's true, I'll be a Nazir if that's Reuven. Second guy, I'll be a Nazir if that's not Reuven. Third guy says, I'll be a Nazir if one of you is Nazir. Fourth guy, I'll be a Nazir if one of you is not a Nazir. Right? And so that was an interesting case. And Rabbi Tarfon said, none of them are Nazirim. Right? Even though one of them was right, at least. But he said, none of them are Nazirim because you don't become a Nazir unless you are sure and you're explicit and you say, I want to be a Nazir. Any condition or any doubt about it, according to the Bita Fund, is not a Nazir. And he learns that from Ki Yafli, that it has to be completely clear in order to be a Nazir. So that's what we need the Ki Yafli for. Good. That's a good answer for the Bita Fund. Hanecha le Bita Fund. El Rabbanan Ma'ika le Me'mar. But the other sages disagreed with the Bita Fund. They said, if you have a doubt, so we'll have to see, you know, is that Reuven? Then yeah, you're a Nazir and you're not a Nazir. So what are you going to do for the Rabbanan? Ela mi ba'ele lechedetanya. Heten nedarim porchim ba'avir ve'en lahem al mashi yismochu. Rabbi Eliezer omer, yesh lahem al mashi yismochu, shenemar ish ki yafli shete pe'amim, asheach echad hafla'a le'isur ve'echad hafla'a le'heter. So we need it for the following opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, who disagrees with the Tanakama of this Baraita. This Baraita says that the laws of annulling vows are flying in the air, and they have no Torah source upon which to rely. Right? So for Braita is talking about different areas of halacha, and some of them have a lot of sources in Torah Shebichtav, and some of them don't. And so the laws of which vows can you annul and when can you not annul it, this has no source in the Torah. They're flying in the air. That's Tanakama. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, that's not true. It does have a source in the Torah. What's the source? Because it says Ish Kiyafli two times. Once in Vayikra 27 regarding Arachim. And again in Vayikra Vav regarding Nazir. That's the two sources we've been talking about this whole time. See how it comes together very artfully at the end. Why do I need it twice? One is to teach me about vows for a prohibition, and so we have to know exactly what kind of vows, what language you use to make a vow prohibited, and the other one is the explicit language that one needs for heter, to undo a vow. So this kiyafli is going to tell us, right, which how to undo a vow. And so according to Rabbi Eliezer, that's the source in the Torah for annulment of vows. And so that is the last answer for what we need kiyafli for. According to Rabbi Eliezer, this is going to be a source from the Torah for all the laws of heter nedarim. And that completes that Mishnah. The next Mishnah teaches Chomer ba'avadim mi ben nashim shehu mefer nidre ishto ve'eno mefer nidre avdo. Hefer ishto hefer olamit. Hefer la'avdo yasa lecherut u'mashlim neziruto. This is a continuation from the previous Mishnah that said there is one aspect in which the vows of a wife are more stringent than that of a slave. In the sense that a husband has only one day to, he can do hafarat nedarim to his wife, but if he doesn't annul it on the day that he hears about her nezirut, then that's it. He can no longer, right? A wife's vow, a nezirut vow, is under her own jurisdiction. She is in possession of her own self, and therefore she can make a binding nezirut vow. And the husband only has one day. Whereas a slave, the previous Mishnah taught, the owner can force him to drink wine anytime that he wants to. Not only on the first day, anytime during his nezirut, the owner can say, I don't want you to not drink wine. I need you to drink wine so you can be nourished. Or I need you to be tameh lamet because I need you to take this into the graveyard. So that's what we learned in the previous Mishnah. Now this Mishnah teaches another different aspect in which a slave, the law of a nezirut for a slave is more stringent than that for a woman, because a husband can mefer do hafarat nedarim, and if he does hafarat nedarim on the day that he hears that she took a vow of nezirut, he says, no, I don't want her to be a nazir, then she is not a nazir at all ever, right? It completely undoes her vow. Whereas for a slave, it does not undo the vow. He can just force the owner can force the slave to violate it right now, but it won't undo the vow. It won't undo the vow totally. And once the slave goes free, if he should ever go free, then he'll have to do his nezirut, right? And that's what it says as follows. If the husband undid the vow nezirut of his wife, that nullification is nullified forever. She never has to be a nazir. Whereas if he forced, it says hefed, but really he's not doing hafada. He's not annulling the slave's vow. He's rather simply forcing the slave to violate his vow. He has a right to do that because, right, the owner says, no, you have an obligation to me first. He can do that while he's a slave, but when he goes free, then the slave will have to make up that nezirut vow. The nezirut vow hangs in the balance until such time as he goes free. All right, that's the standard understanding. Rambam has a little bit different understanding. He says, "Hefer le'avdo yasa lecherut." Once the owner says, "I need you to drink," then immediately the slave goes free. And then he'll do his nezirut. So he does have to do nezirut, but the act of forcing him out of it actually makes him go free, which is an interesting reading. Okay, now, Tenu Rabbanan, Lama Rabo Kofol Linzirut, Ava Lo Lindarim Va'la Arachin. Now, it's a simple question. How come a master is able to force a slave to violate his Nizirut, but he's not able to force him regarding other vows and valuations if he makes a vow to give a worth of someone? We're assuming right now that a slave can make a binding vow. Okay, we're going to reject this by the end, but in the third answer, but we're going to see two other answers first that assume, yes, a slave can make a vow, it's a binding vow, and in general, the master cannot undo it, except in the case of Nazir. Why? So what's different from Nazir? Because the Torah says le'esod isar, to bind himself, right, to make a binding a vow upon himself, nafsho, and we learn that that applies only to someone whose self is in his own possession, and not a slave, because his self is not in his own possession. Well, what's the context of that pasuk? It's in Bimidbar 30, which is the context of general nedarim. So then certainly that should apply to all nedarim, not only to Nazir. Happens to be we use this pasuk to tell us that regarding Nazir, that a slave who becomes a Nazir, the master can override it because he's not in possession of his own self. But actually, we're learning Nazir from all vows. So this should be true for all vows. Okay, here's answer number one. Amarav Sheshat. Hacha b'maizkinan kegon shaya eshkol shal anavim unach lefanav. Gabe nedarim dechi mitzar behai, la mitzar b'harine, la masi kafi le. Gabe nezirut dechi mitzar behai, itzar b'kulehu, masi kafe le. Here's the difference. Regarding, all right, what kind of case are we talking about? Where there's a cluster of grapes on the table in front of the slave. Now, regarding general vows, when he makes a vow, we typically assume he would say, these grapes are prohibited to me, right? He doesn't want to have these grapes. So that's what he says. These grapes are prohibited. But other grapes in the world, if someone goes and gets other grapes, then he would be permitted to them. So therefore, the owner of the slave has no right to force him to eat these grapes, because if he really wants his servant to eat grapes so he'll get sustenance from the grapes, then it's easy. Just go out, get other grapes, and have the slave eat those. So there's really no need to override his vow or force him to go against his vow. Regarding his Nazir, if he says I'm a Nazir, that means he's going to be prohibited to all grapes and grape products in the entire world. And there, the owner says, I don't like this. I need you to have grapes. I need you to have some of that sugar and hydration that comes from grapes and nutrients. And therefore, he can undo it. Okay, so that's an answer. There's a difference. Nazirut is bans all everything, whereas a neder bans only some things. But we reject this. Wait, why'd you assume that there are other grapes in town? It could equally be talking about a case where that this is the only cluster of grapes nearby. And if he doesn't eat this cluster of grapes, he'll be weakened. And the owner has a right to say, I don't want a weak slave, and therefore you have to eat them. And so this reasoning would be the same, even though it's true for Nazir, all grapes in the world. But this could be talking about where these grapes on the table that he made a vow against are the only grapes available. So he should be able to force the slave to go against his vow. Second answer, Ela Amar Rava, Kigon Shaya Harsan Munach Lefanav. So Rava says, new case. We're talking about where there's grape seeds in front of him. This is going to be the same exact thing as the first one. What's the difference with grape seeds? Well, maybe grape seeds is less nourishment than an entire grape. So maybe you think it'd be different. Okay, so here we make the same claim. Gaben nazirim b'hai uhu dimitzad, lama se kafi le. Gaben nazir disan hem bebacharini masi kafi le. Regarding a neder where he makes a vow against these particular grape seeds, so the owner cannot force him to eat these grape seeds, because he can go and eat other grape seeds or other grapes or other grape products. There's lots of things he could make him eat. And he would get the same nourishment. Whereas regarding Nazir, where he's prohibited to all grape products, so then he would have to, then he has a right to. And that's the difference between them. All right, so that sounds good, except that, maybe regarding Nedarim, you assume there's other grape products around. Maybe we're talking about there's nothing around, no other grape products or food or anything where he'll get similar nourishment, except for these grape seeds. And if he doesn't eat them, he'll be weak. So essentially, the point is the same, that any case where the owner says, I need you to eat this so you can work better, he should be able to force the slave. And it doesn't matter if it's a nazirut and he's prohibited to all things, or if it's a vow in a case where this is the only item around that will give him that nourishment. And so essentially, it should be the same thing. And we come to the third and last answer. Ela amar Abaye, lama rabo sarich lechafoto lenezirut, ven sarich lechboto lindarim, ven osarich lechboto lishpua. Abaye explains that for what, lema, does the master have to force him to eat? Only for nezirut. In other words, the nezirut is binding. And that's why if the master says, hey, I don't want you to refrain from all grape products, I need you to eat, he has the right to force him. Whereas for Nedarim and for Shavuot, the owner does not even have to force him because slaves' vows and oaths are not even binding to begin with. So that's why there is a difference, right? And in effect, actually, in the end, there's much smaller difference between them. If a slave makes a vow and says, I don't want to eat these grapes, it's not binding. That's why the owner doesn't have to bother forcing him. Nezirut is the only type of vow that the slave can do, and it will be binding. In that case, if the owner says, I don't want you to be a nazir, he can force him to drink wine at any time. That's what Abaye says. My tama, what's the source? Tamar kera lehara o lehetiv, ma tavat reshut af hara'a reshut yasa lehara lacharim she'en hareshut beyado. Regarding shivu'ot, the pasuk says, anyone makes a shivu'ah for bad or for good, meaning to not do something or to do something positive. So we learn from the comparison, just like if I make a vow that I'm going to do something, it's under my control, I can decide, it's my voluntary choice if I'm going to exercise or not exercise. So too, when I say I'm not going to do something, it has to be something that's in my, that I'm able to do or not do. This could be talking about a positive or negative, an action or preventing an action, or maybe doing something good or doing something bad, doing something evil. And so in that definition, this will exclude doing bad to others because it's not in my voluntary power to do so. In other words, if I make a vow and say, I'm going to go and harm that person. Well, I don't have a right to harm that person, because harming that person violates that person's rights, and it's prohibited. And so therefore, that kind of vow will not apply to begin with. Okay, that's true in general about anyone who makes a vow that will be on account of in a negative way, that will negatively affect someone else. This applies to a slave, that a slave cannot make a vow, and that will affect his master. The same thing as making a vow, I'm going to go punch someone. So therefore, general vows that a slave makes will not apply, and therefore the owner does not even have to bother to annul it. However, nezirut, and that's why we need this pasuk here regarding nezirut that says le'asod yisar al nafsho. Oh, this is coming to tell us that for nezirut, yes, if a slave makes it becomes a nazir, that will be binding. But if the master thinks that he doesn't want the slave to follow through with his nezirut, he can force him to drink wine, and then the nazir will have to make it up if and when he should ever become free. And so that's the final answer to explain the difference between the slave being a nazir, where the owner has to force him if he wants to, whereas other vows, we thought originally that other vows that a slave makes are binding, but now the last answer is that they're not binding to begin with. The next Mishnah follows up on the previous. We just said that if a slave makes himself a nazir, and the owner forces him to drink wine, then when he goes free, then the slave will have to be a nazir. Okay, so when go free, the official way to go free is that the owner writes a script of freedom for the slave, and then he officially goes free. Now our question is, what if he doesn't do that? What if the slave just runs away? So avar mi keneged panav, Rabbi Meir omer lo yishte, Rabbi Yose omer yishte. So if he literally just leaves his master's presence, so he just goes, runs away, so effectively he's free, even though legally, technically, he is not. So Rabbi Meir says he should then keep his nizirut and not drink wine, because effectively he's free. Whereas Rabbi Yose says he should continue. He can continue to drink wine as his father, as his master, forced him to, because he is still a slave. He has not been legally and officially emancipated. All right, that's the machloket. Now, lema bit dishmoel kami palge damas shmoel hamafkir avdo yasa leharut ve'en sarich get shichrur. So maybe Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yose are arguing about the principle of Shmuel. Now, of course, they are Tanaim, and Shmuel is an Amora, first generation Amora. So they wouldn't know Shmuel. They couldn't possibly be arguing about what Shmuel said. But the idea is that they're arguing on the same issue that Shmuel made a ruling about. Now, because Shmuel said, if someone makes his slave hefker, ownerless, right? Behold, my slave is ownerless. So he goes free. That is freedom. And he doesn't have to write a get shichrur. That's the official document saying, behold, I make my slave is hereby emancipated. He doesn't have to do that, because once he renounces ownership of it, it's the same thing. And so therefore we can apply that to this machloket here. Rabbi Meir itle dishmoel, Rabbi Yose letle dishmoel, Rabbi Meir who says that since the slave ran away, once he runs away and the owner gives up hope, right? Just like if you lose an item and you give up hope, yeush, that's no longer yours, right? Whoever finds it can keep it. So to the slave, once he runs away and he's not in the master's presence anymore, the master, it's the same thing as making it hefked. And therefore, Rabbi Meir would agree with Shmuel that you don't need any document. Legally, the slave is free. Therefore, the slave has to not drink wine to fulfill his nazir, because now he's free. Whereas Rabbi Yose says, let him continue drinking wine, because he disagrees with Shmuel, and he thinks that until he gets a get shichrur, official emancipation, even though he ran away, no, he's still a slave. Okay, so we can propose that they argue along these lines, but then we don't want to fit each one into one box only. So we say la dekula ama it lehu deShmuel. It would be nicer if Shmuel followed both opinions. The Gemara says it as if everybody would follow Shmuel, but the reason really that Shmuel, we don't want Shmuel to have to fit only according to the Rabbi Meir. So we can say that every Shmuel agrees with everyone. Ella manda mar ishte savad sof sof mihadar hadar va tegabe lishte hamra ki hechi de la lichosh. So yes, everybody agrees with Shmuel that if he runs away and the owner gives up hope and makes him hefker, then indeed you're right, he would be officially free, and then he would have to be a nazir. He would have to be a nazir. But what if he runs away and the owner does not give up hope and does not declare him free? Then he is still officially a slave. And that's the case where there is a machloket. According to the one who said he should drink, that was Rabbi Yose. All right, he should still continue to drink. Well, he's after all still a slave, and in the end, he's going to have to return, right? If he's ever found or he decides to go back. He's going to go back, and he should drink wine now, because surely the owner would not want him to be weak when he comes back. And so the owner would not want him to be a nazir. And so even though he ran away now, it's temporary, and the owner still hopes to get him back. So he's still under the owner's jurisdiction, and the owner wants him to drink wine. So therefore he should drink. Whereas, Ulman d'amar lo yishte, sava leve le sa'ara ki hechede li hadar gabe, according to the Bimeir. who says he should not drink, it's not because he's actually free. No, the owner did not give up hope, so he's not free. But rather, he, Rabbi Meir, would explain that the owner would want him to have to suffer so that he'll come back, right? The owner will say, you know what? Now I want him to be a Nazir. All right, it's okay. He can, as my slave, he should continue to do his nazirut so that then he'll be walking around and says, oh, I wish I could have some grapes. I wish I could have some wine. And he says, oh, you know what? I know if I go back to the master, then he'll make me override my nazirut. And so that may encourage the master, the slave, to go back to the master. So that's actually what they're talking about. But they could actually both be on the same page with regard to Shmuel. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.